70 this morning in Kenosha, 68 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg.
It's an exciting day on the morning show here on WGTD because I get to welcome into our studios today two very important persons involved in public education here in Kenosha. Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis, who is the superintendent of the school district and who has been on WGTD before, but not on the morning show before. So happy to welcome her to the program for the very first time today. And joining her today is the president of the school board, Tamara Coleman. And the two of them are incredibly busy in just about every respect you can imagine with a school district as large and complex and ambitious as the Kenosha Unified School District. And they are especially busy right now because of a new undertaking, a new initiative, a new round of strategic planning, which is going to kick off in a very important public way with a series of forums which begin a week from tonight. So next week, June 2nd, June 3rd, and June 4th, an opportunity for the public to register its questions and concerns about the Kenosha Unified School District and its hopes and dreams for the future in these very challenging times. So, Leo Jarvis, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. And Tamara Coleman, school board president. Great to have both of you here. Yeah, that's why we're here. So glad to have you. Dr. Savaglio-Jarvis, let's start with you in that I want to know a little bit more about your pathway to the throne of the superintendent. You were mentioning before we went on air, this is actually the first time you've been a superintendent.
Correct.
So this is quite a moment in your educational career. Sketch the career before that.
Okay. It really is. Like you had shared, in July of 2014, the school board had recommended me to be the superintendent for Kenosha Unified. But prior to that, I'm going on 30 years, almost 31 years now in education. I started off as a physical education and health teacher out in Arizona. And I was actually a very proud product of Kenosha Unified. So I do have to go that far back. I went to Forest Park Elementary School, McKinley Junior High, as we called them at the time. And I'm a proud 1980 graduate of Tremper High School. And after that, I went to the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. My original field was physical therapy, but I really realized my impact. I always coached here and there during my younger years. And I really realized that I had a bigger impact if I was working with children. So on those cold, cold days, being up in La Crosse, I had a friend that lived out in Arizona, and there was an invite. And I'm like, I think I'm going there. And I did. After a year and a half at La Crosse, I left, and I then attended Arizona State University, and I got in the education profession. Being health and fitness orientated, it made sense that I went to physical education because I wanted to expand that to other students and motivate, inspire. I did that. I was a teacher out in Arizona for 11 years. And then you have a lot of mentors along the way, and they kept encouraging me, you'd make a great administrator. You'd make a great administrator. And so I did. I kept going back to school. I received my I was assistant principal then in Tempe Elementary School District, and then I was a principal in Tempe Elementary School District. I was there for 20 years and had a child a little bit later in life, and my husband and I knew that we always wanted to come back to Kenosha. We really, really did. I wanted to raise her around family. And truthfully, I wanted to raise her in the public school system here in Kenosha. I felt that I had an excellent education, and it's continued. And so we moved back, and it's been just heaven ever since. And since then, I was the assistant principal at Tremper High School for 2 years. And then I went over to Bradford High School as the principal for 5 years. And then I was promoted to the assistant superintendent of teaching and learning. And then, again, recommended to be the superintendent for Kenosha Unified in July of 2014. So that's me in 30-some years.
Wow, very good. I'm always a little bit astounded that someone who loves children and loves working with children will make that leap into administration, which, of course, is also serving children in very, very powerful ways, but not at all in the same way. And I should think in a way that I would think at least early on is pretty wrenching to suddenly not be a coach and a gym teacher anymore, or not be a choir director, or not be a math teacher anymore, whatever it was that presumably gave you a whole lot of joy. What was that shift like for you from being a teacher to being someone behind a very different kind of desk, most of the time actually kind of away from children?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what you're sharing, many people have made that leap from some type of classroom to administration or another field, if you will. You go through that, and I still, to this day, I have to admit, my daughter, Gianna, who's 10, she attends Jeffrey Elementary School, and she'll say, "Mom, do you still miss the students?" And I say, "I still miss the kids. I still miss the children." You will always miss that, but you make that leap because you realize that when you have people along the way telling you have the knowledge and the skill and potential to impact a greater good. I'm just a big people person and a big communicator, and I realize I can go deeper in how I want to wrap my passion and my love for teaching and learning and our students and our growth and achievement. If I can go bigger, I'm just a person who goes bigger. So you step out of it. But to this day, I will always admit I do miss students, and I'll get my daily dose. I'm out in the public a lot. And matter of fact, I just attended 2 schools in the last day or so here. I was over at Harvey Elementary School, saw their learning centers, all the 4th and 5th and 3rd graders and 2nd graders came down. And so you mix in a different way, and you get that love and attention back, and you give it back, and you can engage. And I was also at Lakeview Tech Academy kind of celebrating their Project Lead the Way luncheon. And then now you're dealing with the high school kids again. So for me, it fulfills that piece about my passion and watching them learn now versus me actually impacting. And then my goal is I'm a motivator and inspirer, so I want to make sure that I'm continuing to do that with the Board of Education, with the teachers, with the principals, whoever I meet. I think it wraps me up as a whole package.
It does, which is why she's our superintendent.
And a good choice it seems to be.
Thank you, Tamara Coleman,
just say a quick word about why you devote so much time and energy to your work on the school board, and particularly as its president.
Well, as Dr. Sue was saying, I am a product of the school district, as well as Kenosha Unified District as well, graduate of Bradford High School. Kind of, it's interesting, the same kind of path, Forest Park Elementary, McKinley Junior High School, and then I made the right choice by going over to Bradford.
She's younger. I will admit, though, she's younger.
I am younger. No, Tremper is awesome. But, yes, I'm a product of Bradford High School. And I have to say, you know, giving back is always something that I've done anyways. I've always been involved in the school district. I have 3 daughters that 2 have already graduated from the school system, and then 1 I have it over at ITA, High School and Academy. But what's interesting is my husband and I have always been involved in the school district where our children have attended, whether it was Nash Elementary, Mahone Middle School. We were always involved in the school in some capacity, whether it was PTA or just volunteering. I will never forget Pat Demos, who was over our student and community engagement, called me one day and said, "Hey, Mrs. Coleman, you know, if you serve on a committee for me." I said, "Sure, one of the standing committees, not a problem." So I start getting involved over at the central office a little bit more. And I'll never forget sitting on I was on personnel and policy as a standing, community member. And I thought, gosh, we make all these recommendations to the school board, and they voted down.
What's up with that?
I said, "Wait a minute. You know, I'm in the wrong seat." I said, I'm kind of like Dr. Sue said, I want to impact more. It was great when I was doing it at my children's school, impacting those, couple hundred or couple thousand students. But I want to do more for my community. This is my community that I grew up in. And there's so much work that needs to be done. And so I, after much conversations with your husband, because this is a lot of work. I don't think people understand the commitment level that we really give.
Right.
And having children, of course. So I said, we had to figure out what we needed to do, and I decided to run for school board and for serving on my second term, just recently reelected. It's been a great three years and a couple months. So I'm honored to continue to serve, and I am a servant leader, and so I just believe in always giving back in whatever capacity that I can.
The two of you are bringing a incredibly positive energy into this room and into this conversation.
Thank you.
At a time when, of course, public education is beleaguered on a lot of different fronts. So you obviously, at least the way you present yourself in an interview like this, is tremendously positive. So I wonder if each of you would just say a word about what you consider to be the exceptional strengths of the Kenosha Unified School District. I mean, the things that fuel your enthusiasm and your passion. And then maybe a word about what you see as its most significant weaknesses or areas in which there really needs to be growth or maybe even some transformative change. But let's start with the things that you are especially excited about, that you see as strengths.
Well, I am very excited about KU, Kenosha Unified School District. We have some amazing things going on in our district, and we can even start with, you know, our fine arts department, our theater arts, our band and choir, our sports. I mean, we're getting ready to do a beautiful stadium for Bradford High School, as well as some improvements over at Tremper and Indian Trail. I mean, we've got a lot of things to be proud of. Even like our Project Lead the Way and our STEM programs that are at Lakeview Tech, those are great things to be proud of. And I guess we see a lot of them now towards the end of the school year because, of course, things are wrapping up and we get to go to all these functions and see all the great things that the students have been working on all throughout the school year. I'll be attending Hawk Fest tonight over at Indian Trail. It's a celebration of all the wonderful things that have gone on over at Indian Trail. These things just kind of inspire me to keep pushing on when I can sit in the audience and see how enthused our teachers are, how enthused our students are, even at the end of the school year. And they've gone through a lot this school year with all the different testing and just trying to make sure our students are ready and career ready and tech ready. It just excites you. It makes you kind of push you on a little bit further. I sat through Indian Trail's choir concert last night, and I know a couple of their board members were at Tremper for their band concert. And the theme last night was significance. And I thought, wow, Dr. Che, you know, significance and how we can make a difference. So it was just really inspiring. So things like that fuel me up, and it just reminds me of what a great community we live in, what a great school system we live, you know, I work with, you know. And so it excites me. Now, in saying all of that, yes, there is another side of this. But I guess I'm a more of a positive person, and I want to always look at the good. So I look at these obstacles or these challenges that are in front of us as opportunities for us to, you know, look at our, even being more fiscally responsible, looking at every line item to make sure that we're budgeting appropriately and not wastefully spending. Those are opportunities, you know, and so, yes, we have some things that we have to look forward for, and we've done a great job working with Dr. Savaga Jarvis, her leadership team, in making sure that we're preparing. It's about being prepared and planning ahead. So we've looked at all of our worst case scenarios, and I think we've done a great job of looking at, if this happens, we're prepared to do this. If that happens, we're prepared to do this. So it's just preparing, and always staying positive, because it's very easy to get very negative and, you know, have that black cloud and say, woe is us. But it's all in how you look at it. It's a mindset. And I think that the leadership team has a very open mind. Opportunities are available for us, and we're just going to seek them as best we can and continue to make sure that our students are first.
Whoa, adding to that.
I know. I'm sorry.
I probably say ditto.
There you go. No, she said it very well.
She said it very, very well. So I obviously everything that Ms. Coleman had shared. And I would just like to add that when we were talking about the district that fuels me, or that passion too, is really, we have to really talk about our students and our staff. I mean, that, to me, I'm so proud of the hard work on education is tough today. There's been so many state mandates and federal mandates coming down that, when I go into classrooms, when I go into the buildings and I see activities or projects, it's almost like that's not affecting our staff. And I think that's a commendable thing, because the staff that I believe in Kenosha Unified is focused on the children. It's focused on the learning. It's focused on teaching. They're not letting these other outside factors influence. And I think that's a huge strength. Some of the other things I think I'm very proud of, I'm in looking where we're at, the school board actually really worked through their governance structure, which we call the 8,000 series.
Yes, we did.
And that's through Ms. Coleman's leadership, as well as all board members having several retreats. That helps govern how we operate, because my job is to listen to them and support the things that they want,
effort.
But it helps govern. You know, we also did pass an employee handbook, so there's a huge switch that we had gone through several years with Act 10 and those sorts of things, but we improved the employee handbook. Also very proud of, I think you mentioned the sports referendum, to make this community more aesthetic looking. I mean, when you think about when I first came into Bradford, one of my first questions to me from a Bradford alumni group was, so where's the football stadium? And I had no idea the past history a little bit about that. So to see that now some of those benefits are coming back to the greater good of the community, because so many other people use those sports facilities other than just the students. I also say academically, and many people don't know this, but we actually have more students taking our advanced placement courses, the AP college courses, and taking those exams. So that's very positive. Again, showing that staff is diligent on making sure our students achieve and are excelling. We currently have our ACT scores are above our state average, so that's very positive. Mm-hmm. That's at college and career readiness track. So we're showing, again, that what we're doing in the classrooms from kindergarten on up, actually pre-K on up, we're preparing kids to be college and career ready. And I had one more, but I lost track of that. But it'll come back to me. I think the challenges, I think that's what you mentioned. I mean, currently right now, if we're reading the papers and staying abreast of everything, we know that right now that Joint Finance Committee has the team has looked at the state budget proposal that will be going forward, and there's many things in there. I think I'm very pleased to hear that the money potentially is going to be restored, the $127 million to the K-12 public education. I think the only thing is when you look at that, it's a package I think they're presenting. We just didn't know the challenges or concerns that will come regarding potential expansions of all of the vouchers and things like that. So, but I think like exactly what Ms. Coleman is sharing, I have a team that's very hopeful and very positive. And in my whole career, I've used the same line. I look at things as opportunities, not as negative or we got to go backward to do something. How do we work through it so that our focus still is on the students and our community in Kenosha Unified? And I know we'll make it. Hmm. We'll survive it.
Yeah,
we will.
It's being prepared.
It's a strong team.
Yeah, it's being in the know, understanding, and being prepared. Mm-hmm. Because we know none of this can affect student achievement. And that's our goal, and that's our focus, is making sure that our students continue to excel. And that's why I love when you said, Dr. Sue, about our teachers, just their focus on our students. And you can tell by all the great things that are happening in our district daily.
Right. And the other probably success, too, is, I mean, really our graduation rate has increased, too. And right now I think we're top among all of our five competitive size-wise districts. We're at 88.6%. So we're seeing students graduate and going on as college and career ready. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's exciting when you think about all those things. And to me, there's more of those than there are of the other stuff.
Right. The strategic planning process that is underway, first of all, I want to understand, I want our listeners to understand the nature of it. Is this sort of a strategic vision that has already been shaped and now you want the public's reaction to it? Or is this very much a strategic plan that is still in flux, still being created, and you want the public's input in its crafting?
Correct. And I like the way you said process, because really this isn't a plan yet. It's a process. And we have looked at it as phases. So right now in phase one, the process involves is having a mission, a vision, core values, and strategic direction. And so that's what the board and leadership has set out to do. So in early February of 2015, we started this process. This isn't a plan yet. But eventually the outcome will be to have a plan with strategic direction, timelines, action steps, who's responsible, and how do we measure ourselves. But in this very first initial phases, we as a team, on
Valentine's Day.
I made sure there was plenty of chocolate for everybody. I don't know how we did that, but again, we met all day on a Saturday, February 14th, so it's good we remember that date.
Yeah.
And we came together through a facilitator, and matter of fact, it's Dr. Randall Clegg, and he was our lead facilitator during our curriculum audit in November of 2013. And so he was very aware of the district, you know, very aware of where we needed to go and head and think about. So he helped us formulate, working together and collaboratively, a mission statement, a vision statement, core values, and four strategic direction statements. So now what we're doing is we liked what we did, and we call it draft. It remains in draft until the board actually will approve it at some point in September. So right now what we have done, we've been to 10-plus collaborative workshops with the administrative team already, with, we call it our supervisor technical groups. So we've had these meetings at the district level where they come in and they collaboratively give us feedback on each one of these statements. We have a process that we ask questions like, is this clear? If not, why not? Is something missing? If it isn't, that's fine. If it is, what do you think is missing? And we ask specific questions. So really, we're not talking much during this process. The same thing for June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. It'll be the group dynamics and people having input on each one of those areas to cover. So, matter of fact, last night I was just at Bradford High School, and we had, and now we're out to the staff. So we had staff members come from all the schools. And they show up, and we take them through the same process. And we are getting excellent feedback. I mean, I thought we knew what we...
I know.
Now I hear what they're thinking, and it's like, wow, they're really going to create some... In the end, we'll have a dynamic product for our mission, vision, core values, and strategic direction that will be a collaborative and collective input from the many stakeholders of the community. And then our next step will be, like we're saying, you know, being out here to get people to come out June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, because that's the community. So we've been... And we've also been to businesses... Kiwanis, we're going out to Rotary, the Cush Group, we've did a big presentation, Kaba. So we're trying to get every aspect, and we just say, hey, call us or get a hold of us, and we'll come to you and present, or we'll do mini presentations. But we want the voice of the community to impact. Then that final statement will help. Then there's a phase two. And we'll hold on that one, but I don't know if Tamara has anything
no,
like
this
to say
is
too.
Exactly what, you know, you're right on. It's been a great process thus far. I am really looking forward to the community part because, you know, when we go through this, we know what we mean. We know what it means. You know, like, for instance, the draft mission is preparing all learners to succeed in life by providing exceptional opportunities that inspire achievement and excellence. Well, what does that mean? Well, we know and we understood where we were coming from with this, but now it's, does the staff understand? Do, you know, even students, we want the students to come to these community focus groups, get their feedback. Does that make sense to you? Do you feel like we can prepare you to do this, you know? And I'm really excited about the community being involved in this process. I think it's important. We have three wonderful communities that kind of bring our unified district together, Pleasant Prairie, Summers, and then, of course, Kenosha. So we want to hear from those folks. We want all of them to come. We're giving them three opportunities to come. And we laugh about it because we want the room to be so filled that we have to have
more
of these.
We'll open our doors for more sessions.
And we've built our timeline.
That would be a nice problem to have.
Yeah, it's a beautiful problem to have. And we're prepared. Our timeline is prepared to do that. And so we're hoping that we just max out the room on all three nights because there's so much, you know, input that wants to be had. We welcome that. We want that. I encourage our community to come out and really be a part of this. I want to be able to say when this is all done and when the board has to vote on this, that this truly, truly was a community, all stakeholder involvement decision. You know, that everyone had a play into this and had a piece of this. And we can all feel good about it and walk away feeling very proud of the four pieces that we're going to be voting on. So I'm excited. I hope people will come out 5:30 to 7 on June 2nd and 3rd. And then I get on the 4th, 5:30 to 7. Now, the first two will be at the ESC building on June 2nd and 3rd. That's on 3652nd. And the third one on Thursday, June 4th, will be at Bradford High School cafeteria. So I just really want people to really come out. If you need to just come for a little bit and leave early, that's fine. They're working sessions, so you can get in where you can, give us as much information as you can. And if you have to leave early, we understand. But we just want you to have a voice.
The school district, of course, has undertaken strategic plans before, and to probably varying degrees of success. And probably by now, their heads are starting to spin. Like, didn't we just do this? Or didn't we just do it again before that and before that and before that? Are there particular ways in which you are really trying to make this strategic planning process especially effective?
Yeah, and that's great, Greg, because what we realize, and you, again, you're so in tune, you just hit the nail on the head. That's what happened. And when you look at some major companies that are thriving well across the country and internationally, it's because they've established some mission and some vision. I mean, you think about Nike and Just Do It and how long that's been lasting and all the other ones. What happens, this is a different process, because what's happened technically in the past in education, somehow we've kind of just stayed within our niche, if you will. We invite some community people in. For the most part, it might be district staff. We haven't expanded outward. That I think that's been our challenge over the past. And so you're true. People are probably like, well, we've done it and been there. My goal would be that no matter if I'm there or the board's there, whoever changes occur, that this plan is sustainable, because it's not healthy in an organization to keep changing it, because even your staff then just wonders what's up and, oh, here we go again. So we hear it all the time. So I think the goal with this plan is, how do we continue to make it sustainable? So whether, you know, I'm here or the board's here or whoever's here, is this something that we can have for Kenosha Unified for a long time to come? And we believe by really inviting our community in, because I have shared before that, wow, you know, just being back 10 years now, this community is so focused on education, which is awesome and powerful, that if we don't tap into the wide ranges of ages, from very young as students to our older population, we're missing a lot to potentially this plan, this final plan that comes out, and how we can operate and behave. So I think people just need to realize it's different. And I think Tamara had mentioned it, people need to realize we need your voice to make it sustainable. It's not, you know, we're hoping it's not going to be one little thing and then in a couple of years it's something different. Whatever we set, we also want to be able to measure ourselves. So as we go along, we're giving feedback and reports back to the school board and the community. So if we do this well enough, we should be able to come out and have more public speaking things and saying we're doing really well in this area, or this area needed tweaking, and getting feedback back and forth. So it's almost like a two-way process with our community and with our educators and how we operate.
And you hit it right on, Dr. Sue, when you talked about measuring. I think that's an area that I, as a board, I think we really want to see the measurement, and we want to see the outcome. Implementation, we know, I'm a project manager by trade, and so I'm always looking at implementation being the hardest phase. And then, of course, you've got to have those benchmarks and scorecards to measure what you're doing. I think sometimes we implement so quickly that, and then there's no time to measure, because you didn't really get maybe buy-in. I'm not going to say you, not all the time, but sometimes people don't feel like they knew about certain things, and so it just becomes chaotic. So I like the process that we're taking, where we're upfront talking about some of the things that we're doing. We want you to be a part of this. Help us, per se, help us get to where we want to be. And then let's measure it. Let's all measure it together. Where are we? And then report out. How can we make it different? Do we need to make changes? Up, this is a success. Let's spread it out across the district, you know. So just really making sure that we're measuring along the way every 6 months, or however Dr. Sue and her leadership team feels that that's necessary. But that measurement part is going to be so important for the Board of Education, because we want to be sure that this is sustainable, at least 3 to 5 years, because that's really how long a strategic plan kind of lasts. So we want to make sure that it's sustainable and not changing it in two years for whatever reason. So measuring is so important to the Board of Education.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Tamara Coleman, president of the School Board of Kenosha Unified, and Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis, who is the superintendent. A couple of things you've said have prompted me to check out something that I really have never done before. Last night, I went on Facebook and went to a number of teacher friends I have and said, I'm going to be talking to the superintendent tomorrow, and is there anything you would like me to ask? And actually, a number of really interesting questions came through. And it really, by the way, reinforced what you were saying, that the Kenosha Unified School District is blessed to have a lot of teachers who, more than anything, want to make a difference in their students' lives. And if anything is frustrating, it's when there are things in place, for whatever reason, that make that more difficult to do.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to share this, and I don't want to rephrase this. I want to just share this question exactly as it was phrased to me. And this is how it begins. Dr. Sue is wonderful, and I think will in time turn KUSD around. Ask her how she plans on restoring the morale in the schools. with all the changes and implementation of Common Core, Infinite Campus, Grading Program, Educator Effectiveness, District Curriculum Rollout, and District Mandates, teachers are exhausted, overwhelmed, and frustrated. How can she slow the ship down?
That's a very good question.
It's a very good question. And let me say, too, I know enough teachers in other places to know that this is not a situation unique to Kenosha Unified School District by any means. And probably many of the things that she's listing, I don't even specifically understand exactly what that is, but I can understand how many things in isolation might make tremendous sense, and yet when it comes to implementing them and one on top of another, you end up with teachers in a sense boxed in and not able to be the teachers that they want to be. So
thank you. Yeah, and thank you to that teacher for calling that out and sharing with us. I appreciate that. One of the things we recently had in Kenosha Fide was a presenter. His name is Jamie Ballner. He's written a book called Schools Can't Do It Alone. And what intrigued me most about this conversation was, now being in education 30 years as well, and I can honestly say I agree with that staff member. If I was still in the classroom right now today, the number of things that have come their way, truly, and this is a message we have to continue to push out there, have been from our state and federal mandates. They are truly mandates. So what I watch internally is I check our team. Is that another layer we're going to add to the educators? Ooh, we cannot do that. Probably the only one, I don't think she mentioned this one, but there's two that I know of that currently we operate internally. Infinite Campus, she had mentioned, and that is an information database system. And we had to change just because the old, you know, how technology changes and the old system wasn't meeting the needs and of data recording, actually, for the State Department as well. And then we do another assessment we call the Measure of Academic Progress. That's an internal system we use to help monitor student progress so teachers change and help differentiate their instruction versus one state assessment at the end of the year. So all those other things that, and I guess what I hear sometimes is we need to help our principals, we need to help our teachers understand. Unfortunately, these are state and federal mandates. However, one of the things as a superintendent, I belong to the CISA 1, our region superintendent group, and we are behind the scenes calling out to the State Department of Education if they'll listen, and or the state in itself if they'll listen. So we have actually done resolutions. We've presented to the school board. The school board has presented resolutions about how we know that this dump is so heavy on our educators. So we are trying to push back as well. Do they listen? We'll let that be. but I do have to say another key fact. We recently, and this hasn't been done in my knowledge as widespread, we utilized a survey. I was real big when I came in July that at some point I needed to get a pulse check. In all of my positions, I always did that, whether it's as a school leader. I wanted to know the pulse of my building. So I brought to the attention of the school board, I really need to know the pulse of the district. And so recently, March and April here, we're working with Workplace Dynamic. We pushed out a staff-wide survey. That survey results will come back in the next month or so. And I'm hoping, and I believe people will probably be honest on there, because that's an area that will show me, okay, where's that pause? Is everybody feeling exhausted? And if they are, then that's something we have to get together and really plan and talk about. Educators do have, for the most part, and it's been approved by the school board coming up next year as well, Fridays are typically, our students are early released, if you will, and there's what we call professional learning collaboration time in the afternoon. So we're trying to intervene, and we're trying to give educators more time to professionally collaborate, but also what happens is professional development occurs during that time as well, because there's constantly new things or stuff that comes up that as administrators we have to share with the educators who are working with the children. So I get it, and I would feel that I would probably think the same if I was still in the classroom today. And my last point, which was interesting, when this presentation by Mr. Vollmer, he actually showed a calendar. It's very interesting to see from the 1900s to the 2015 today. It started out a very small list, if you will, and each year, each decade, if you will, things just grew and grew and grew. And guess what? Nothing has been taken off that list, and our calendar, our instructional time has never increased. So exactly what that staff member is saying is true. I'm aware of it. That's good. I want to hear from the survey, and then working in collaboration with the administration team, how can we help relieve it, knowing though we are required by state and federal mandates, but is there anything else we can do? And maybe they've given us good input. Sometimes that's what I look for, like, tell me how. Right. I don't have to have all the answers. The board may not have all the answers, but our staff has answers. So hopefully there's someone that says, here's something. Have you thought about this?
Right.
Great.
That's why this community focus group is so important, because maybe we haven't thought of something that they could bring to the table. And like Dr. Savaglio Jarvis stated, you know, she's part of CESA 1 with the superintendents. Our board is part of the WASB, Wisconsin Association of School Boards. And I had the pleasure of attending with Mike Fikowski and Mary Scheider, my vice president. We attended the last spring conference. And it's interesting because we're hearing the same thing from other school board members. Their staff is saying the same thing. So we know we're pushing back, too. The school board is working with state legislators. We are saying, hey, our teachers are maxed. You know, help us however you can. These mandates.
Or stop helping
or
us.
Or stop.
That would be the perspective, I think, of at least some teachers is stop intervening in the way that you're intervening.
Absolutely.
You want to help, but you're ultimately not helping when this whole process gets
absolutely
so laborious.
We'll take what we can get. So you stop or you let up some, we'll take what we can get.
And I'll have to admit, several weeks ago, I was at Marquette University. There was a pivotal points forum, and very, very intelligent people, but people from the state as well were there. And one of the common themes were a little bit like from us as educators, you know, if the state didn't get involved, we would probably, you know, excel a little bit faster and not put all that strain on the educators, because that's exactly what's happening. And as part of that state budget proposal plan, too, when they look at the assessment piece, we just went through something we called the Badger exam. We used to do the WKC, and that changed. So, again, that teacher's exactly right. This whole new Badger assessment was huge. There was three different components to it, something new for every educator to go through. And we are hearing that no longer will be the exam next year. So you can imagine, not only for staff but our students too, going through something that will no longer be available next year. So you're right.
It's like,
you know, if the state could just
let up a little bit
or back out, we would probably be able to meet the needs of the staff and the students.
And I just want to add one more piece. I know we're surveying our staff. We're rolling out a survey to our students as well. So this teacher was mentioning, you know, their max, we want to hear from our students as well. So Dr. Savaglio Jarvis's team has also rolled out a survey to all of our students. They can pick it up on their Infinite campus and do it at their leisure.
6th through 12th grade.
You're right. 6th through 12th grade, because we want to hear from them too. Are they feeling this? How are they feeling about the pulse of their building? And you know, their voice is just as important. So we're doing those two surveys right now. I encourage all the students to get out there and get their surveys done. We need to hear from them. That's the only way we can make true change, is if we really understand what they're feeling and what their how it's impacting them too. So,
I know another tough issue that we don't have time to really strongly explore or thoroughly explore, but I want to just give you a chance to just respond to this. And it so happens I've heard this from a number of teachers, but my wife, who is a teacher, not with Kenosha Unified, with another school district, I won't name the school either, but just yesterday was this issue kind of came up again of when you have in your midst, in your classroom, certain students that really have difficult issues. So in this particular case, it was a young student who actually went on a rampage, and to the extent where police had to be called. And as she was describing, it was not somebody she had to directly deal with, but she was well aware of what occurred. And she was describing the way in which a teacher's hands are almost literally tied in terms of, you know, what they are allowed to do, to what extent they're allowed to even touch that student who's throwing hundreds and hundreds of library books on the floor and this, that. I mean, just, it's about as bad as it gets. Fortunately, things like that don't happen all that often. But every time I hear that, I'm just kind of amazed that, you know, it's tough enough to have a student, you know, that in that sort of state that might have various issues, but then to be so terribly constrained in terms of what you can do I don't know what the term is, subdue that child or restrain that child or keep them from harming others and harming the building and you. And I've heard this a lot from teachers. And I wonder if you could just briefly address that, because that is also a reality that amidst all these students who are anxious to learn and these teachers who are anxious to teach them, there is this really complicated reality which doesn't seem to me was a reality, you know, when I was going to school. And what are those regulations that, where do those come from? And do those need to be reexamined? I mean, if this is a new reality, how do we best deal with it for the sake of everybody involved?
Right. I think excellent question. It's a tough question to answer because even being a building principal, every child is unique. And so every, you know, you could, that could be one example of something that happened, but there's like 10 other layers behind there that an educator may not know about, whether that child has an IEP, a 504 plan, what is the FBA, functional behavioral assessment aligned to it. We call it FBA or behavioral intervention assistant. So there's a lot of behind all that. So I always, when that happens, like if I was a building principal at my building, what you really want to do is assess each situation individually. And you want to make sure that this your staff, if other people are seeing that happen, that you have an opportunity to express what those needs are for that child. There's no doubt that those things happen because our children today, right now, Kenosha Unified, matter of fact, we're about a 53% poverty rate. Our children are experiencing numerous things in their family lives. Like, you know, like you said, if we had more time today, without naming names, I can, in talking to a grandparent, I can give you story after story. So our kids are coming very emotionally fragile, and that emotional fragile state prevents them from learning yet because as they're very young in elementary school, if they haven't been able to adjust that emotional piece with dealing with life in general, those outbursts are going to continue. But in education, we really have a process, if you will. And again, that goes to, okay, are parents aware of the process? Are grandparents aware of the process? Are our own educators aware of the process? In which we get into what we call student support or special education services for children that have that are very unique and have mm-hmm. and need help. They need help and attention. And again, if we go into it, I can give you a lot more background about special education,
someday.
Things like that. But to me, it's really honing in on that child and having that teacher. If it was in my building, they'd come to me and say, Sue, I was, you know, really, wow, this really took me back. I have to educate that teacher at that moment as well. So I have to utilize what I know in terms of student support, special education, to help that teacher understand, as well as then the teacher in the classroom, though, would be aware of those needs and how to handle a situation. Now, at times, if a child hasn't been identified yet for any type of special services, which is typically K-1 and 2, because you don't want to label kids way too early until you have all the background knowledge, mm-hmm. it is more challenging for a teacher. But what principals or leaders should be doing is help that teacher to understand it's a documentation then, okay, let's look at what happened. You know, after the situation is maybe under some type of control, we need to document what happened. Did the child come in angry or upset or hasn't eaten? What were those antecedents before? So typically K-1, 2 is a very observation, mm-hmm. recording, and for an educator, I get it. I have a sister-in-law in Kenosha Unified as well. My sister's in Kenosha. And they work at very challenging schools, and they're in that primary grade. So I understand that as well. But it really comes down to good communication. I believe, I'll say this, between the leaders in the buildings and their staff, to help staff to understand their needs of the whole school, where they're at regarding those challenges, where they're at poverty-wise, where they're at academically. And if you're really in that constant communication with your staff, those episodes won't fire a whole staff up. They'll understand, wow, this is our culture. And in order to get to a better culture, here's maybe what we need to do.
Right.
And I think those outbreaks will be more minimal. Mm-hmm. They'll be minimal. It's because everyone's communicating and we know what to what. Yeah.
Of course, one of the challenges for the school district is this sort of monetary uncertainty. And I suspect we're at a point in time where you don't know all the specifics yet about exactly what the financial picture is going to be. What is your best guess? We just have a minute or so, a couple of minutes. But what is your best guess in terms of how the school district's going to be able to move through this next phase? It sounds like you are guardedly optimistic that the situation is not going to be quite as challenging as everyone initially feared.
That's correct. What we have done, and actually coming up next Tuesday, the board will see in a report, we have prepared for the worst but always hope for the best. So we started in January. We hit it very hard. So I'm like, wow, we did all of that, and now look at. But we had to be prepared for the worst, but we had to hope for the best. So I think now what I have seen is, if I've read everything that I've tried to read in the last, since 1 a.m. the other morning,
24 hours.
I do believe that this package deal that the state has proposed, that went to the Joint Finance Committee, is going to move forward here next Tuesday. But who I preface it with, who knows, because this is politics. But I do believe if, in fact, this combined budget package goes forward next week, I do think the legislative will approve it. And so then I'm more hopeful now that this money will be coming back to our public education. The hit that we thought we were going to get, the $3.2 million, we believe will come back. I say that, though, lightly, because, you know, with politics, anything can happen. But
it's true.
It is. I don't know. But we're prepared. Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. We started very early.
So you already have at least a general sense of, depending on what the hit is, where cuts will occur.
Absolutely. We were prepared probably a month ago already with that. And then we've been working and tweaking and cleaning up. Mm-hmm. So we're still prepared. We're still prepared for the mm-hmm. board to potentially approve that, our recommendation in June. However, though, things may change is what we're hearing. And then the good news is we'd go back to the board and say, okay, where do we want to put money back in, and have some flexibility now?
Right.
That would be the best case scenario.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I can assure parents, because I'm a parent myself, we worked very diligently with the leadership and Dr. Sue and her team to make sure that student achievement would not suffer. Programs will not suffer. I keep hearing that. I know parents are very concerned about that, and teachers are very concerned about, higher class sizes. That was like one of the first things the Board of Education talked to Dr. Savaglio Jarvis about, was this cannot impact student achievement in our teachers. So rest assured, we're doing our best, and we're feeling good about where we are.
Well, on that optimistic note, we have to draw this to a close, but I'm certainly glad we had the opportunity to probe into some important questions and some important issues that are impacting the Kenosha Unified School District, everyone who works for it, and, of course, most importantly, the students who are being educated by it. And it's a great pleasure for me to talk to both of you and to get a sense of the passion and ambitious vision which you both have for where Kenosha Unified is headed. We want to remind all of our listeners of the public forums that are coming up, in which the public is welcome to come and share their thoughts, their concerns, their questions about the Kenosha Unified School District. These forums are coming up on June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So the first one is going to be a week from tonight at the Educational Services Center in their boardroom from 5:30 to 7:00. And similarly, the next night, Wednesday night, the 3rd of June, and then the 4th of June, that third forum will be in the cafeteria of Bradford High School. That's the corner of Washington and 39th Avenue, also at 5:30 to 7:00. And I assume people can go to the website of the school district if they want more information. What is that address again?
It's KUSD.edu.
Oh, well, that's pretty easy. I show that off the top of my head.
And the flyers listed there as well.
Yes.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Very good. Dr. Sue Savaglio Jarvis, the superintendent of Kenosha Unified, great to finally meet you. And I look forward to having you on the morning show again as your schedule allows it.
Likewise, and thank you. Thank you for allowing
thank
me to speak.
Thank you.
And Tamara Coleman, president of the Kenosha Unified School District, great to have you here as well. Thank you so much
thank
for your
you.
Contribution.
Thank you for having us.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we speak to the author of a book called A Touch of Genius, which tells the story of Dr. Edwin Land. He's the man who revolutionized photography a few decades ago, when he invented the Polaroid camera. Until then, you took a picture and then you sent off your film to have it developed, and you waited and waited and waited. Instantaneous photographs were possible with the Polaroid camera. The world had never seen anything like it. And this book explores not only the development of the Polaroid camera, but also the fierce competition which it generated, and a very hard-fought court battle with the company of Kodak, who tried to encroach upon what Polaroid had developed. It's an interesting story, which we'll explore on tomorrow's morning show. And a quick reminder that Thursday, I'll be speaking with Kate Jerome from the Horticulture Department here at Gateway and answering lawn and garden care questions, which will be posed by you. So Kate Jerome joins us on Thursday. On Friday, you will be taking an oral tour through the Kenosha Theater, a beautiful, spectacular structure in downtown Kenosha. Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. It's WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information at carthage.edu. Increasing clouds through this morning into the afternoon, and we have an 80% chance of rain, a high of 76 degrees, cloudy with 60 for low tonight, tomorrow's high 78. This is WGTD.